You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Stefan Brueggemann. He's an artist living and working between London and Mexico City. Stefan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. What's happening in your studio now? What are you working on at the moment? I know there's a show going on, but what is it that you're involved with now?
Well, right now I'm working with a new series of works that I called mirror paintings. Their concept is about time, and I include one of my text pieces into the mirror, and then I use this aluminum paint, and then I obliterate the whole text and part of the mirror, creating like some puddles of aluminum paint. That's what I'm doing right now.
And that sounds like it also has a lot to do with so much of your work from the past, things that are text-based. Where did this body of work come from, or is this a very new technique you're experimenting with?
Yeah, this is new. This is basically, I kind of like always to contradict my practice, and I was trained as a painter, then I moved away from painting and develop more conceptual work using only language and text. And now I'm kind of mixing the two ideas, and these works really try to create a doubt on the practice. Like if it's a gesture, if it's a concept, if it's rational, if it's irrational, you know, it's trying to do a juxtaposition of opposites. So right now I'm working with that. So that's how the transition has been made.
So let's go back to your early work. What was the first show that you can remember having, or your first kind of?
Well, the first show I kind of feel like it's where I had a starting point was 1998 in London, in a place called Museum of Installation. That was an installation where I removed, the museum was in a building that had a storefront. And on the storefront, they had obviously a very big glass window where they put all the information of the program of the institution. And the only thing I did was they put all the information of my show in a vinyl text, and then I removed the window and just laid the window inside the space. So the idea was that the institution was open 24 hours and that I was letting in all the air and dust into the space, and the show was called Opening. So it was like I was more involved with this idea of an institutional critique.
And how did that, and that was right after you graduated? That was the first show that you had?
Well, not exactly the first show. I never finished art school. I mean, I did only a couple of years. I was in a very academic school where I used to draw naked bodies for 6 hours a day. So there was a point where I left the academy and started doing other type of work. But this was the first show I did when I moved for the first time to London in 98. I did some previous shows, but this was one like a very pivotal exhibition for me that really made sense to the things I was doing.
Well, it was also moving from, I mean, as you're saying, you know, perhaps a very academic way of working, the kind of, you know, working in life, drawing classes, painting nudes all day, to something that's institutional critique, which is a very different way of, of even approaching the art world. What created that change? Why institutional critique?
Well, I think I'm always I wanted to work with different mediums, if you want to call it, no? And I think the idea that using the institution as a medium was kind of interesting, and also built with a more architectural space, physical space, and also a political, socio-economical idea of things. So I think that was a way of knowing that art can touch other spaces.
Well, I always think there's this other advantage to, or this other aspect to institutional critique, which is, in a way, it's something of an inside game. I mean, it's something that everybody can participate in, but to create work that is an institutional critique, you have to understand the politics and the structure of the art world and how all parties engage in it. Correct? So it from the artist's point of view, and correct me if I'm wrong or you're approaching it a different way, but from the artist's point of view, it's a way of also entering the system, so to speak, in a way that's aware of all the elements that are influencing you. In other words, as opposed to trying to have a show of paintings in the gallery or having an installation in the gallery, if we're saying, the medium is the gallery or the institution itself, it's almost an advantage in terms of an artist gaining power in terms of interacting with these worlds, which are often seen to have power over artists, the opposite.
Yeah. And also my approach was that when I create works, I want them to be understood by the people who work, who know about art, but also to people who are unaware about art, like my grandmother. No? Like, I always try to think that I want to approach the whole spectrum. It's not just like a very elitist group of people. And for instance, in this piece called Opening, it was very clear what I was doing. You could understand that this kind of borders that create the institution with the public was totally open, 24 hours. It was like something that it was being like a naked body. You know, like very open, and people could understand that something with the idea of limits was being interact in the work. So I remember people walking on the street didn't understand if the museum was already abandoned or what was going on. So at the end, I kind of like that I created a conscious about institution to the public.
I like that too. And I like the example also of, you know, yeah, which perhaps we may revisit, but the idea of you want your grandmother to be able to understand this. This is that's a lot to ask often from artists working in institutional critique, because there are a lot of issues that, you know, perhaps have to be explained, but in that case, I think the openness was very direct and obvious, especially the discrepancy between whether it was, you know, abandoned or not. What was the next project that you did that you think was pivotal to your work?
Well, I did another installation like a year later in a museum in Mexico called the Parking Lot. And what I did there was that I used the ceiling of the museum, that it was a large, you know, a large ceiling. So I did like a potential parking lot. So I with an architect, we designed like all the signs you need like all the lines to plot the cars and you know, like what level are you in. And this idea was more to do how to disappear in institution in terms of when the city is being registered from the sky, when they take pictures of how the city is being transformed, you will understand that if the ceiling was a parking lot, the whole building was a parking lot. So it was kind of changing the program of that specific building into not being a museum and being a parking lot. And also that linked a reference between this idea that the parking lot is also a container of cars that come in and out, and the museum has a function of a container of art that comes in and comes out. So it was kind of this idea of with a gesture, change the whole idea of what was that building about.
And at this time, you're still beginning your career. These are works.
Yeah, this was 1999. Yeah.
Right, and these are works that can't be sold. Is that correct, or was there any interaction with selling works?
Well, no. I mean, everything can be sold, but at that moment, I was not selling those works. I mean, not that I didn't want to sell them, but I mean, it was not something that it was happening for me. It was not my main objective. Put it in that way.
And when did works start selling? I mean, the reason I ask is because that's another relationship to institutions. And
yeah. Well, later on, I started doing more text-based pieces where there were vinyl text glued directly to the wall and also neon text. And those kind of started a relationship with the market. You know, they were more, even if they're not so accessible as a commodity, but they could be bought more easily than other big installations.
Right, and that was, and that maybe we should talk about that text-based work. That was also a series that continued for quite a while, just doing the kind of vinyl text-based work when you began having shows with people like Lawrence Wiener and other conceptual artists working in similar areas, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so why the departure from that? Because I know you did that for quite a while, and now there isn't so much of that text-based work. What made you leave that? I mean, I'm thinking of that because I also interviewed Lawrence Wiener for this series, but, you know, you look at his career and, you know, he's stuck with only that for his whole life.
Well,
probably still will, but what created your transition?
I mean, I for me, it's very important. When I decided to become an artist and get more involved in that, for me, it's an act of freedom. So. And I kind of like to always have an existential question of what's the artist practice and always to push it to the limits. So I kind of like to, you know, how can I be coherent from using installations to text to painting and then to sound and then, you know, like trying to expand all the mediums and try to build a constellation of thoughts. And I kind of like that, you know, kind of always put myself in a vulnerable position where, you know, you're leading the spectator to different views. And that for me is like something that I enjoy and that it's also something that puts me in a position where I have to reinvent myself all the time. And for me, I kind of like that. I mean, at the end of the day, there is like a thing that language is always very present in my work. But then how can you stretch it into different areas?
Right. That's interesting. And let's maybe talk a little bit about your grandmother as an idea or as an audience, because I think this is very kind of interesting as a conceptual artist, if I can say that, or the way you're working. I know that, you know, my relationship to my family and my mother was, I wanted the same kind of thing. And I remember one day her reading a review of something in the paper, and she says, I don't know what the heck those artists are doing. That makes no sense at all. And I said, well, what are you talking about? I said, that's exactly the kind of work that, you know, that I do and that you've liked and that the museum showed. And she said, well, if you were my son, I'd probably think the same thing. You know, so there's this, you know, on one hand, you know, family or parents want to understand, but if we can use your grandmother as an example, or just as a way of thinking, have you had conversations ever with her or someone like her or someone who's not schooled in arts, asking questions, perhaps just about the text work, the vinyl text work?
Well,
that,
obviously, I mean, you always look for an audience, no? I mean, you have an audience and you have to not to work for them, but obviously you need the spectator does the half of the work, no? Like, I mean, you need to talk to somebody. And
right. When
I always use this example of my grandmother, it's this idea that you have an audience that is trained for different things, and when they confront the work, obviously you have to generate something there. So for me, always when I have people asking about it or being annoyed about the work or having a big doubt about it, for me, that's when the work is being activated. When I hear comments like, oh, very nice work, it's like the most, I mean, I get disappointed. I mean, it's like being ignored. So I think sometimes you cannot underestimate the public, and it's very interesting how you can communicate. You have to be very clever or very precise and how you throw those questions into the world and to be able to create that conversation, or the other way around, to be have a very confrontational attitude in the way you really don't let the public in, and that also generates attention. So, I mean, it's part of communication.
And are there members of your family can remain anonymous that there's a conversation there that of them not understanding and perhaps after talking they do understand? Can you recall a conversation like that, or has that happened?
Yeah, it has happened. I have in a way I've been very fortunate because my parents are intellectuals and archaeologists, and so there's an openness about, you know, freedom of speech and that kind of situations. But then maybe other parts of the family, like more relatives, obviously they always question, like, I could do that. No, that's always like the first reaction or trying to, how can you make a living with this? Well, basic questions that, I mean, are part of the world. No? I mean, are part of what we have to deal with.
Of course. And how do you confront that, or do they ever get over that? That kind of, I could do that.
Obviously, I think it's it takes time sometimes, and I think when time goes by and they see how things have been resonating, it also resonates in their own lives. So I think that's why the works are timeless in a way that you can approach them and see them and then come back to them and then they make sense. Or it's a process that it's until it makes sense. You know, like you have to, everybody has their own timing and everybody has a different circumstance when they approach the work.
That's true. It's interesting that you mentioned, if I got that correctly, that your parents are archaeologists, because that as an approach and even an intellectual foundation, that sounds like there's some relationship there to your work, a kind of archaeology of the urban landscape of the institution. Is that am I reaching?
It's different approach. I mean, I kind of find it fascinating that archaeology is about the past and trying to figure out how the past and maybe how the past is still changing, no? I mean, in a way that I find it fascinating. But my approach is more about the present future. It's about trying to understand humankind and also how society is moving and trying to understand what's the future, the present future. I'm very interested in that and being part of that.
And so after the text-based work, we're moving more into painting. Is that correct? Is that really what came next?
Well, it's painting with text. And I also have been using spray paint. So I've been using a text, but I've been writing it with my own hand instead of printing them on vinyl material. And I've been doing this work called Headlines and Last Lines in the Movies, where I do installations where I cover the whole space with mirrors, and then I spray paint headlines of recent news that I've been on the day I am doing the installation, and then the last lines of dramatic movies from the history of cinema, from Citizen Kane to recent movies. And the idea is that they are, I use spray paint, it's like my handwriting, and so it kind of looks like a protest or a, I would not call it, more urban visuals. And the idea of this work is that society is being shaped by these two main mediums, that is information and film, dramatic film. It's what shapes us as humankind. And the idea that you enter this room with mirrors and all this text written there in the mirrors, and you're part of this moving picture.
Yeah, I like that. It also creates there's quite a bit of tension between the kind of comedy or comedic moment in movies and headlines of news, which are often the opposite kind of sentiment, right? That's
exactly. I kind of like that when you see the installation, they blend into each other, and then you don't really know what's fiction, what's reality, what's a beginning, what's an end. You know, like, it kind of blends into one reality, that it's our reality.
And that brings us up to the work you're doing now, just about, which is what you talked about at the beginning. Is there a show happening now that this will be listened to in the month of April or May at the latest in 2015? Is there a show that viewers can go to or see, depending on where they live?
Well, right now I'm doing the opposite. Right now I'm more concentrated in several publications, but I'm working deeply on them. Last 2 years I had a lot of shows going on. Actually, I have still a show on view in London. It's a public work. It's in the street of Queensgate, very close to the Museum of Natural History. And it's a wall where I have a retrospective of all my text pieces. And it's the wall of a parking lot, so you can view it from the outside when you're walking. And right now I'm working on 4 or 3 publications about my work. So that's what I'm doing right now.
And the publications are you're writing for those publications or assembling?
Yeah, there's one book that I'm doing that it's conversations I've had with 5 conversations that I had in the past. One is Malcolm McLaren. The other one is Hans Ulrich. Glenn O'Brien and another friend, Mario Garcia Torres, another artist. So I'm doing revisiting those conversations and doing a publication of that. Then I'm doing another book where it's all visual, it's like doing a big picture essay of my work with images and my own work. So I'm trying to use also books as an exhibition, if you can call them like that. It's another way of communicating the work.
Stefan, thanks so much for talking with us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you and learning about your work. I look forward to seeing those books. The interviews sound fascinating, as well as the other book. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.